I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Tammy Rossman Benjamin, director of Amcha Initiative, Anti-Semitism on College Campuses. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom, menachag Shavuot Sameach. Today is Shavuos, Shavuot, the holiday on which we celebrate receiving the Ten Commandments at Sinai, greatest divine revelation of all in Jewish tradition. On this day, 3,250 years ago, all Jews stood at the foot of Sinai, and God gave us the Ten Commandments aloud, according to tradition. But the account of these events in the book of Exodus, while stirring, is also cryptic. And since, with the possible exception of the Exodus from Egypt itself, this is the single most important event in the history of our people, we'd like to know more. The Torah, however, is very sparse, which means that throughout the generations, rabbis have stepped up to explore what might really have happened at Mount Sinai on that crucial day so long ago. There are perhaps as many interpretations of what took place at the first Shavuot as there are Jews, but I have two favorite stories that illustrate how complicated the issue of the giving of Torah really is. They also illustrate what I call Newton's third law of Midrash. For every rabbinic explanation, there is an equal and opposite explanation. The tale used most often to illustrate Ma'amad Har Sinai, the great events at Mount Sinai, tells us that God wanted to give the Ten Commandments, the most precious of gifts to humanity. God first went to the most powerful of the peoples of the ancient world, the Egyptians, and asked them, "Will you accept the Ten Commandments, my most precious gift to all humanity?" The Egyptians said, "What's in it?" And God said, "Thou shalt not murder." The Egyptians said, "But that's how we decide who'll become the next Pharaoh. Forget it." Well, God was a little disappointed, but decided to try another nation, went to the Philistines and said, "Will you accept the Ten Commandments, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the Philistines said, "What's in it?" God said, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And the Philistines said, "Well, what's the fun of life without that? No, forget it." God was getting discouraged and decided to try another famous and powerful people. God went to the Canaanites and said, "Will you accept the Torah, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the Canaanites said, "What's in it?" And God said, "Thou shalt not steal." And the Canaanites said, "What? That's how we make a living, by stealing. Forget it. No thanks." By now, God was completely depressed, even despondent, and running out of credible candidates. Finally, in desperation, God went to the smallest, weakest nation, the people of Israel, who had just gotten out of slavery and literally had nothing. God said, very tentatively, "Will you accept the Ten Commandments, my most precious gift to all humanity?" And the people of Israel said, "Na'aseh v'nishma, we will do what you command, and then we will try to understand it. We will first do whatever you ask. Only then will we pause to try to listen and understand the why behind it." Well, that's a wonderful midrash on the meaning of obedience and faith. What a fabulous people we Jews are. Well, always were from the very start. Isn't that nice? But there's another midrash, another rabbinic story on the same theme, equally famous, equally ancient. It says that when we Jews stood around Sinai, we were frightened by all the sound and fury coming from the mountain, the lightning, thunder, earthquakes, the shofar blasts that heralded God's revelation. Our people, the Israelites, finally shouted at Moses that we didn't want the Ten Commandments at all. So God picked up Mount Sinai itself by the root, held it over the heads of the assembled multitude of Jews, and God said, "Either you accept the Torah, or I drop the mountain." At that point, the people of Israel looked up and said, "Well, since you put it like that, okay, we'll take the Ten Commandments and the whole Torah too." That tension between immediate excitement and acceptance in Jewish tradition and a hesitating, uncertain, ambivalent response to the responsibility and commitment implicit in Torah, well, that's still present in Jewish life today. Which kind of Jew are you? It's a relevant question. For most of us, the answer is a little of both. Eager to be the best human beings we can, the best Jews, but not so sure we wish to take on the responsibility of doing so. That tension contributes to the creative energy of Judaism as we work out our own relationship to God and commandment and Torah. To play us in this morning on that theme of revelation, here's a song about Moses in the wilderness from Sephardic singer Gerard Edery called Ali en El Midbar, God in the Desert. There in the desert I saw burning. I saw the tablets of the law come down. And see, the man is Moses, our teacher, who went up and came down from the heavens above.
Ali en El Midbar, videare. Las tablas de la ley vine a bajar y mirad que señores Moshe Rabbeinu que subió y abajó a los altos cielos. Malachim del cielo lo quieren quemar, nacido de mujer que busca en santidad, y mirad que señores Moshe Rabbeinu que subió y abajó a los altos cielos. Los malachim del cielo tienen por el celo basarvadam que busca en el cielo y mirad que señores Moshe Rabbeinu que subió y abajó a los altos cielos.
That was Gerard Edery singing Ali en El Midbar for the Festival of Shavuot today. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish on this Feast of Weeks is Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin. She saw the rapid growth of anti-Semitism on college campuses around the nation and decided to do something about it in an intelligent and effective way. Find out what the Amcha initiative is, how it's addressing this critical problem at the university level, when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning. Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin is the founder of the Amcha Initiative, which addresses anti-Semitism and all kinds of challenges that Jewish students face on campuses today. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning.
So tell us what led you to start the Amcha Initiative.
You know, as a faculty member at University of California, Santa Cruz, I teach Hebrew and Jewish studies, have a lot of Jewish students. The students were coming to me and saying that they were really having great difficulty with what was going on campus. They were feeling at times harassed and unsafe and intimidated. And it really made me and my colleague, Dr. Lila Beckwith, who is an emeritus professor at UCLA, decide that we really wanted to get engaged in this issue and work on combating the problem that was occurring not only in the campus square with some of their student peers, Students for Justice in Palestine and other similar groups, but also sometimes in their classrooms as well. So we decided as faculty members that we had an insider's knowledge of how the university works, about the Academic Senate, about administration, that we were in a good position to speak up on behalf of Jewish students, because it's very hard sometimes as a student to actually defend yourself. So that's how we got engaged in creating Amcha, as a way of really reaching out to the Jewish community in particular, but also those who support the Jewish community, so our friends in the Christian community and even in the higher education community who care about these issues and care about the safety of all students and Jewish students, to really speak in one voice on behalf of Jewish students and what was happening and raising these issues and getting university administrators to actually deal with the problem instead of sweeping it under the rug and ignoring it as they have been doing for many years.
You know, Jews and Israel, in fact, are probably more popular in the United States than they've ever been, and probably as negatively portrayed on college campuses as they've ever been. This is really quite a disconnect.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're hitting the nail on the head. For many, many years, in Europe and other parts of the world, of course, the situation is very different in terms of Israel's image, and the anti-Israel sentiment. But in general, in America, studies have shown, you know, as recently as last year, that the vast majority of Americans are very much pro-Israel. But as you're saying, as true as that is in the general population on college campuses, it's actually the exact opposite or inverse, that more and more we're seeing really anti-Israel negative narrative, that students who go in, studies have shown actually that students who go in are almost to a one. They come out more negative about Israel than when they started. And that's a problem. And for us, that per se isn't the problem, because we're not concerned with Israel's image on campus. That's not what we do. Our problem is the impact of that on direct impact of that on Jewish students. That it actually, what we've seen over and over, and our major study that we did shows, is that this anti-Zionist narrative activity, BDS, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, and how it's played itself out on college campuses, is not about Israel, at least not for most Jewish students. It's about what happens to them, how they bear the brunt of it on their campus, how they are harassed and intimidated and bullied and threatened and sometimes assaulted, and swastikas, daubed on their Jewish fraternity houses, and they feel unsafe to walk to Hillel for a Shabbat dinner. That's what we care about. It's really the impact of this virulently anti-Israel narrative and rhetoric and expression directly on Jewish students, who sometimes don't even have a position about these issues, aren't outwardly
right.
Pro-Israel, but bear the brunt of the negativity towards Israel directly in their lives on campus.
We will explore those issues and talk about some of the controversial events at the University of California system itself when we come back in a few moments with Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin of the Amcha Initiative here on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good
Rabbi.
Morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes, they want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
We have 4 stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at 2jewishradio.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming them there or downloading them from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 5 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We now continue our 2016 2 Jewish Presidential Report. After Donald Trump used the term America First in late April to describe his policies, the Anti-Defamation League sent him a letter urging him to drop the historically tainted slogan. The ADL was speaking for Jews and others who remember it as the name of the isolationist movement championed by a notorious anti-Semite to keep the U.S. out of World War II. But in a speech following his victories in the last 6 Republican state primaries last week, Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for president, made clear he's not about to take the ADL's advice or abandon the slogan. America First, Trump said, means protecting American jobs from unfair foreign competition, tapping America's energy resources like coal, instituting protectionist tax and regulatory policies, loosening regulation, reducing taxes for middle-class Americans and businesses, protecting American workers from immigrants. It's important to understand what America First means, Trump said. Well, at its core, Trump's policy actually shares elements with the isolationism of 75 years ago promoted by the leaders of the America First Committee. It was created in 1940 after Hitler had already invaded Poland, World War II had started. The America First Committee argued the U.S. should take a neutral approach to Hitler's Nazi Germany and do business with it because the Nazi regime did not threaten America directly. The leader of the America First movement was aviator Charles Lindbergh, who publicly espoused anti-Semitic viewpoints. Lindbergh warned that Jews posed a threat to the U.S. because of their influence over the media, movies, and government. Trump is apparently going to use America First as a slogan in his race against Hillary Clinton for president. He seems intent on resurrecting this term, which has such notorious and ugly baggage. For many Americans, the term America First will always be associated with and tainted by this history, ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt said in a political season already that has prompted a national conversation about civility and tolerance. Choosing a call to action historically associated with incivility and intolerance seems ill-advised. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There's been a lot in the news about the Argentinian Jewish community. A lot of them have made aliyah to Israel or to Miami, other places, in part because of the continued problems with corruption, a failure to investigate the attacks on the Jewish community, like the Amiya bombing. Jewish communities in Latin America are significant. There's a lot of Jews in Latin America still, but it's been a challenging region for Jews also.
Right. I think it's fair to say, at the risk of oversimplifying, the biggest Jewish communities are in the countries with the biggest populations, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, and they are significant Jewish communities facing the challenges that all citizens of those countries face, which are the challenges of countries in which, in many cases, not all cases, the rule of law is not yet firmly established. There's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of fishy goings on with the banking system. I mean, only recently did the newly elected president of Argentina eliminate the fact that there were like 8 different exchange rates, a blue rate, a black rate, a purple rate, whatever. So now there's one rate of exchange. that's kind of necessary for doing business domestically and internationally. Many, not all, countries in Latin America have a history of corruption and, you know, bribery and whatever, and Jews have had to adapt and have done so with more or less success. There are exceptions, not always, of course, but right now Chile looks pretty stable, and Jews there feel pretty comfortable and are not leaving in massive numbers. Much further north and closer to our borders, Costa Rica, exactly. Right. So, you know, it's a very mixed bag. But looking at Argentina, which is one of the biggest communities, yes, Jews have had a very mixed history there, and the country itself has had a very mixed history. Periods where disappear became a transitive verb. Normally it's an intransitive verb, but people just were disappeared. Recently, there have been anti-Jewish incidents. They used to be attributed to Nazi refugees, people who fled from Germany and reestablished new lives in Latin America, whether Paraguay or Bolivia or Argentina, and who wanted to carry on Hitler's mission. And then more recently, they're attributed to Islamic terrorist groups and other anti-Israel or pro-Palestinian groups. So
Iranian-sponsored terror groups.
Right. And this obviously can happen anywhere in the world. It happens in France. It happens in California. It's not only in Latin America. But, I mean, the question of the future of Jewish communities in Latin America in general, in Argentina in particular, is really part of the larger question of the future of those countries. Will those countries get their act together and firmly establish the rule of law and transparency and good governance? Or will they, in many cases, continue to be kind of a soap opera where those elements are missing? So the best, most able, most hopeful people are almost forced to emigrate, whether to the U.S. or to Canada or to Israel. It's up to them, obviously.
And, you know, it's a fascinating point. I mean, Jews do better in places where there's the rule of law, where there's transparency, where there's good governance, where there's an opportunity to succeed because it's a fair playing field.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi Nan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Israel has a group called the Tzofim, which are scouts. In America, we're familiar with Cub Scouts, Brownies, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. The Tzofim are very similar, but also kind of different. Can you explain?
Yes. So the Tzofim in Israel is a youth movement. It's a secular youth movement. We have many youth movements in Israel, from Bnei Akiva to Shomer HaTzoir, Noar HaOved. Most of these youth movements started in Europe, mainly in Europe, and some of them were youth aliyah groups.
So they were like young Zionists, sometimes
exactly.
Religious Zionists, sometimes socialist
yeah,
Zionists, different movements. Right.
Most of them came from a very religious
background, right.
Background and wanted to create the new Jew, with not, you know, with the books, but
right.
With the muscles.
With the shovel and with the pick and everything, right. Okay.
So Tzofim also one of them. And it's really like the same, like here, the scouts, with one main difference. We don't have like separate groups for boys and girls.
That's
together.
Interesting. So they're together, the boys
yeah,
and girls together in
together.
The Tzofim.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Also, we have the one unique branch who started, I think, 10 or 12 years ago, or even a little bit more, for a population from Ethiopia, because until then they were usually, if they will go to youth movements, because they not used to go to
yeah,
youth
they didn't have youth
in
movements
Ethiopia.
In Ethiopia, of
so
course.
They will go to Bnei Akiva, but so the Tzofim,
but they weren't all observant, so they didn't
yeah.
all, you know, Bnei Akiva being a religious youth
yeah.
movement.
So the Tzofim, the scouts, the Israeli scouts wanted to offer, you know, the non-observant Ethiopian
right.
Another choice. So we have Shevet Eitan for Ethiopian teens. And so the Tzofim, I think it's many years by now, I think more than 40 years that they're sending a friendship caravan. Every summer they are sending three different friendship caravans to United States. And the idea is really to create friendships. and to connect Tucson and Israel via music, which is has its own language. It doesn't matter if you are lefty or righty, what you think about Israel, what you don't think about, you love Israel, you don't like. There is a way to connect, and music, I don't need to tell you, Rabbi, but music definitely creates
music creates bonds, you know, bonds and builds bridges. Builds society.
Yeah, definitely. And I heard many stories about part of the uniqueness of the Tzofim, not just bringing music, but also being hosted by the community for a few days. So host families, we're still looking for host families.
Just a hint.
And I read a letter, like I think was sent 40 years ago, it's on the Tzofim website, about someone from Cleveland, who their first connection to Israel was by the fact that his family hosted young Tzofim, and you know, I'm sure that this young Tzofe don't know how he impacted this young man that then made Aliyah. And it started all with this connection. Because
so that connection to the Israeli scout led to him moving to Israel, making Aliyah.
Yeah, and it's not the goal, of course. The goal is only to connect Tucson.
Tucson or wherever they are.
Our goal is to connect Tucson and Israel in another way. So you're all invited to Monday, June 20th, 6 p.m. at the JCC community concert, free and open to all.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. And by the way, if you've never heard them, they're very entertaining. And, you know, when you talk to them, it makes you feel good about yourself, not just about Israel or about young people. Thanks so much, Oshra.
Toda, Rabbi.
When we come back on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Rivka belongs to the Bikur Cholim, the caring community temple group that visits and helps sick members of the congregation. She is visiting homebound patients when she runs out of gas. As luck would have it, a gas station is just a block away. She walks to the station, borrows a gas can, and buys gas. But the attendant tells her he has no gas can, so she goes back to her car with its I Heart Israel and Shabbat is Coming bumper stickers to look for something that she can fill with gas. She finds a bedpan she has for needy patients. Rivka brings the bedpan back to the gas station, fills it with gas, carefully carries the full bedpan all the way back to her car, decorated with those Jewish bumper stickers. As she pours gas from the bedpan into her tank, two men watch from across the street. One turns to the other and says, "If it starts, I'm converting to Judaism." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week, our portion B'halotcha from the book of Numbers is filled with incidents and events from the wilderness days, plus a couple of important commandments. It's in this week's portion that instructions are given to create the first menorah, the seven-branch candelabrum that's become the most enduring symbol of Judaism. It's also in Baha'u'llah that we get the first rumblings of rebellion that will explode into full-fledged revolt against Moses and Aaron in just a few more weeks, with the disastrous story of Korach. But most significant in this week's Sedra is a peculiar little story about gossip. Moses has married a new wife. His brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, don't think much of her. They begin to talk about her behind her back and about Moses, circulating rumors and gossip. She's not the right ethnicity. They don't like her influence on Moses. She probably laughs inappropriately or wears her hair too long. The response by God is swift and decisive. Miriam, although oddly not Aaron, comes down with a dread ailment. Moses' siblings soon realize the error of their gossiping ways, repent, and are healed. But the point is made. Gossip and slander are among the most destructive influences in society. If we don't avoid them, we will indeed have tsoros, trouble and heartache. If we can avoid them, we have every chance to build a society of holiness and good. It's a great message today, too. As the Talmud teaches, gossip hurts three people, the speaker, the listener, and the subject. It hurts the person who gossips, the one who listens to gossip, and even the person who is gossiped about, well, maybe most, that one. All are damaged by the experience. No one benefits. Circulating rumors, sharing personal information about others, accurate or not, is not the way to create real community or intimacy. Lashon hara, the unethical use of speech, is attractive to many of us, but it's wrong and destructive. There are many other things we can talk about, all of them more valuable. A famous dictum says that great minds speak about ideas, smaller minds speak about events, and the smallest minds speak about other people. May we learn from our portion that the best way to use speech is to build and heal and learn, not to engage in gossip. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Tammy Rossman Benjamin, the founder of Amcha, the group that seeks to document and counteract college campus anti-Semitism in America, will fill us in on the most recent developments in this area, explain what works in responding to campus anti-Semitism, what doesn't, all when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A new Jewish community was officially born in Antananarivo, the capital of Madagascar, last month. 121 men, women, and children underwent Orthodox conversion to Judaism on the remote Indian Ocean island, a nation better known for lemurs, chameleons, rainforests, and vanilla than Jews. The conversions took place over a 10-day period. They were the climax of a process that started 5 or 6 years ago when followers of various Messianic Christian sects became disillusioned with their churches and started to study Torah. Through self-study and guidance from Jewish internet sources and correspondence with rabbis in Israel, they now pray in a Sephardic-accented Hebrew and strictly observe Shabbat and the Jewish holidays in Madagascar. The conversions were facilitated by Kulanu, a New York-based nonprofit specializing in supporting isolated and emerging Jewish communities, but they were initiated by the residents. Now that we've reestablished the State of Israel, it's time to reestablish the Jewish people, especially in the diaspora, said Benita Nathan Sussman, vice president of Kulanu. Beginning May 9th, members of the community came before a Beit Din rabbinical court convened for the occasion in the Madagascar capital. The court included three Orthodox rabbis, all belonging to the group that serve far-flung Jewish communities and support converting emergent Jewish groups. Over 120 new Jews fulfilled the halachic requirements for conversion. Shortly after their ceremonies were complete, more festivities started. There were 12 weddings and a symposium with a feature presentation from British academic and author Tudor Parfit, an expert on the 10 lost tribes and the lost Ark of the Covenant. Many islanders of Madagascar believe they are of Jewish or Israelite descent, and their founders were seafaring members of the lost tribes. Belief in the Malagasy secret persists despite evidence that most Malagasyans are of Indonesian and African origin. Well, nonetheless, you can visit their shul when you make it to Madagascar. In Athens, Greek Defense Minister Panos Kamenos called on the Justice Ministry to take action against a neo-Nazi lawmaker when he made anti-Israel comments in Parliament. Speaking during debate in Parliament last week, Christos Pappas from the extreme right-wing Golden Dawn Party of Greece called Israel an eternal enemy of Greece and Orthodoxy. Pappas was talking during a debate on the ratification of Greece's international agreements with other countries. The State of Israel implements genocidal methods and is a regional troublemaker, he said, asking how a state like Israel could possibly have relations with Greece, the cradle of civilization and humanism. Defense Minister Kamenos, a member of the Nationalist Independent Greeks Party, called Pappas's remarks racist and xenophobic and called on the Justice Ministry to take action. Kamenos has himself in the past been criticized for anti-Semitic comments, claiming in 2014 that Greek Jews paid fewer taxes than other Greeks. But since taking up the position as defense minister, he has overseen increasingly warm ties with Israel. Golden Dawn is now the third largest party in Greece and frequently uses Nazi imagery. Its leaders deny the existence of Nazi death camps and gas chambers. And JDate, the Jewish matchmaking website, has closed its offices in Israel. Spark Network, which operates the site, recently laid off 25 employees in Israel and closed the office in Herzliya. The Israeli JDate website will continue to be maintained from the U.S. and include Hebrew language content. The closure of the Israel offices is part of a reduction in the company's operations worldwide following declining revenues. JDate, the first Jewish dating website, was established in the U.S. in 1997 and began operating in Israel in 2002. The website has about 750,000 subscribers, including an estimated 350,000 in Israel. That's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, founded the Amcha Initiative to address the anti-Semitism that seems to be flourishing on college campuses all around the country, in spite of the fact that Jews in general have a very positive image in America today, and Israel, in fact, has a very positive image in America today. The University of California, you know, I'm a UCLA grad. Everybody in my family went to UC at some point or another. It has a reputation of being a great public institution, and that means it has to be an open forum for all kinds of discussion and debate. But things have taken some really dramatic turns at UC Irvine, at Berkeley, at UCLA in recent years. Can you talk about the specific kinds of events and how the Amcha Initiative attempts to address these?
Yeah, what we're finding is that the anti-Israel sentiment on campus is really turning into and has taken a turn, I think, because of this, the embrace of the boycott movement, the BDS movement. Part of that, the platform, the policy, in fact, of that movement of BDS is not only about Israel. It's not only trying to shut down all exchange, cultural, academic, economic exchange with Israel, which is what a boycott is. It actually is to shut down any support of Israel or Zionist narrative on campus, or anyone who is perceived to be supportive of Israel, to actually shut them down right there, not in Israel, but actually students and supporters, even faculty on campus, to actually shut them down as well. And I mean, really, it is a complete shutting down of really of one's right to expression. So what we're finding is that in so many ways, the anti-Semitism these days, the face of it is really a shutting down and taking away the civil liberties of Jewish students through things like, actually shutting down their events. As you mentioned, UC Irvine at the top of the list. I mean, we just saw a couple of weeks ago a repetition of something that's happened, that actually started, a trend that started at UC Irvine in 2010 when 11 students from the Muslim Student Union tried to shut down, disrupted the Michael Oren, Ambassador Michael Oren, talk at UC Irvine in 2010, and that trend has continued across the country with dozens and dozens. Actually, we keep track of it on our website, dozens and dozens of instances where Jewish student events and pro-Israel events are disrupted, shut down, routinely. It's not, no other student group has to suffer that kind of activity being directed at them, targeted them, trying to shut down their events. That's an extreme example of actually just really trying to shut down and take away the freedom of expression, the freedom of assembly of Jewish students who are expressing their identification and support for Israel. But we even see it when we see, the kinds of discrimination that we saw, for instance, at your alma mater at UCLA, with the Rachel Beta incident, where a Jewish student was running for the Student Judicial Board, and she was almost basically disqualified on account of her Jewish agenda or her alleged or seeming support for Israel, even though that what was mentioned was her Jewishness, the fact that she was, I think, a secretary for her Jewish sorority and she was involved with Hillel. So holding against Jewish students their Jewishness and discriminating against them egregiously so for student government and other student activities because of their alleged or presumed support for Israel, which would therefore disqualify them from holding a student office, which is really, again, trying to shut down, take away the liberties of someone based on their connection to Israel or their Zionist connections. Even putting a swastika on a Jewish fraternity house is an act of intimidation. It's trying to silence students.
Not to mention it's a hate crime.
It is a hate crime, but I'm trying to put it all in sort of a general picture to see what's happening and to see why it's occurring. It really is occurring as part of this sort of vicious anti-Zionist agenda and activities, which really is about and directed towards anti-Jewish hostility and very much directly targeting Jewish students for harm. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing on campuses across the country, UCs are probably at the top of the list in terms of what we're seeing in terms of both anti-Zionist activity and anti-Jewish hostility. And it's a problem, and it's something that absolutely needs to be addressed. And I think it not only by students, in fact, I think students are not the ones to necessarily address it. I think it needs to be addressed in the Jewish community. It needs to be really at the top of the priority list for Jewish communal organizations, because these are our kids. This is our future. These students, and the biggest tragedy, in fact, is not is not the students who are suffering from the anti-Semitism, although that is really, I mean, the ones who are in some ways fighting back and standing up and then getting shut down. The biggest tragedy is that there are students, the vast majority of students, I would wager, who are actually looking what's going on and just stepping back and saying, I don't want to be involved. I don't want to be involved in Jewish life if this is the price that I have to pay to be involved. And that's the tragedy.
So let's talk about the larger Jewish community. I think, frankly, we haven't paid anywhere near enough attention to what's going on campus, and we haven't provided the resources, really haven't thought about it in a serious way. Do you think that's true?
Yes, I do. And I think that's starting to turn around. I think the wake-up call has been BDS. I think people, rightly so, see this boycott movement as harkening back to really, really dark times. The only other time that there has been something of this nature, the kind of boycott initiative, even more than in South Africa, is in Nazi Germany. And so I think it's really quite scary for Jews that this is happening, and it's so undeserved. There is such an incredible hypocritical double standard going on here, applying this, these sanctions and this kind of demonization to the Jewish state. It really is waking people up to the fact that BDS and the whole anti-Zionist movement is anti-Semitic, and so this is the wake-up call. In my opinion, I think it's important to fight BDS. I don't want to say that it's not, but I feel like in fighting BDS and in fighting, Israel's image, we're forgetting about the biggest casualty, which is the impact of that on Jewish students. In a way, Israel can take care of itself. Israel's a strong country. Israel's a thriving democracy, and doing well in so many ways. And yes, Israel's image is being tarnished, but Israel is strong. What's happening is, in my opinion, for Klal Yisrael, what we have to sort of look at is its impact on Jews in the diaspora and how this is really affecting them and making them unsafe. And that's what we have to, it's a slight shift, but I think it's a shift that we have to make. We have to direct a little bit less attention on BDS per se and Israel's image per se and look at the impact of that tarnishing, the impact of BDS on the Jewish community, but in particular where it's most, reached crisis proportions on campuses and for Jewish students, and to really speak up and to make the case that Jewish students are being treated unfairly, that no other, racial, ethnic, gender group would be treated with the same disrespect and insensitivity as Jewish students.
So what are the best ways for people to respond? What kinds of responses should we seek as Jews in America, as people who support Israel or simply don't like anti-Semitism?
Well, I think on a campus we have to be smart. And we have to realize that there are certain things that we have to realize. One of them is that even though there are certain what we think of as sort of perpetrators of the problem, we have, on the one hand, we have the students, the anti-Zionist student groups like Students for Justice in Palestine. And on the other hand, we have anti-Zionist faculty who have, let's say, endorsed academic boycotts of Israel and promote BDS, sometimes even in their classroom and in their academic conferences. Those are what we think of as sort of the perpetrators, the sources. But we also have a third source, if you will, which are university administrators. And even though they're not the ones directly, usually not the ones directly perpetrating, sort of BDS or anti-Zionist activity on campus, really they are the ones who are allowing it to happen. That if they if they stood up and spoke up and did their due diligence and treated Jewish students the same way they treat every other racial, ethnic, gender minority, that actually there wouldn't be a problem, or the problem would be very attenuated. And so where we have to direct ourselves is not towards the student groups and not towards the faculty, but towards the administration and towards getting them to have a clear, fair, even-handed policy and enforcement of policies when it comes to Jewish students, but also to educate the campus community in the same way that, let's say, 30, 40 years ago, there was a realization that we needed to deal with certain problems like racism on college campuses, right? So the whole way in which the university community deals with racism is very different than how it deals with anti-Semitism, because it doesn't get anti-Semitism in the same way that it gets racism. We understand that racism is not good. At this point, the campus community needs a real education about what anti-Semitism is, in particular, what anti-Zionism is, and how anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are very much the same thing. That anti-Zionism is the face of anti-Semitism on college campuses. And there really does need to be education and policy enforcement that we haven't seen before. And that's what we have to be asking for. And one of the things that's happened recently that I think is really a huge step forward, really it was a landmark statement that the University of California Regents put forth a couple of months ago, and we were very much involved, our organization and our partner organizations were very much involved in achieving this result, was that for the first time ever, the most prestigious public university system in the world really said that anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic forms of anti-Zionism are like every other form of discrimination, including racism, sexism, homophobia, etc., and that these have no place at the University of California. That was huge because it really sets down, I think, a statement that should set the tone on all of the UC campuses. But not only that, I mean, I think that UC, given its stature in the country, really can set a model. It can be a model for every other university campus to actually address this issue. I mean, they actually took this issue on. They for so many years they were ignoring it and sweeping it under the rug, and they finally decided that they needed to do it. It had had reached such a point that they couldn't ignore it any longer. And we are very grateful for that acknowledgement, both of the problem of anti-Semitism and that it is directly linked to anti-Zionism. And that's the first step. I mean, that's not everything. Obviously, it needs to get implemented, and we need to see changes in policy, and we need to see educational programs. Those are yet to come, and we have to keep pushing for those. But I think that's where we see our opportunity to get involved, right? We do have a really strong statement. We have to make sure that statement at the University of California, the next step is to make sure that statement is actually embraced and then implemented on each one of the 10 UC campuses. And then we have to take it on the road. We have to get communities in states across the country and in cities, areas, public university systems across the country. We need them to replicate what the Regents did. We need them to take a stand on anti-Semitism and acknowledge that anti-Zionism is a major part of what we're seeing on campuses today that is leading directly to anti-Jewish hostility, and that has no place on any university campus across the country. And I think this is a huge opportunity and area for activism for the Jewish within the Jewish community, and it's positive, it's reasonable, and it also rests on sort of the pillars of fairness and equity, and I think that it's not controversial at all. And that we should all be able to get behind it and push it, and really push it in our individual communities wherever we are. So in Arizona, in New York, in Washington State, in Florida, everywhere, the Jewish community can actually rally around this effort and actually make a difference, a positive difference for Jewish students.
And the time is now. Imloach Shave Matai. I want to thank Tammy Rossman Benjamin for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The website is Amcha Initiative, amchainitiative.org. And thank you again. We'll talk again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
When we come back in a moment, we'll hear about next week's guest on Too Jewish and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Dr. Esther Sternberg, founding director of the University of Arizona Institute on Peace and Well-Being, an expert on the science of the mind-body interaction in illness and healing. Our playout this morning for Shavuot is a contemporary setting of the priestly blessing chanted on this pilgrimage festival morning. This setting is by Bryce Megdahl. My friends, may you have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, a Chag Sameach of Shavuot, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.